Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the upcoming Outlander series or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 44 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. So, announcements this week. We got a couple of pictures from Outlander Star's Instagram account. And honestly, this first one, I don't know what's hotter. That sweet car or Toby.
Tobias.
I don't know why. I just got super familiar with him.
This is the second week in a row you've gotten familiar with him, girl. I mean, not that you want.
Not as familiar as you would like to be with him.
Hey, I have never said that. I just like him.
That's my point.
No, I have respect.
It's borderline obsession. Come on.
No, it's not. I do find him attractive, but I think he's a tremendous actor.
I like him better like this. But like I said, that car is sick.
I mean, as a human, he's human. You know what I mean? The car is pretty awesome.
He's always human. But out of costume, I do not associate him at all.
With Tobias or anybody.
With Tobias or Frank.
I'm sorry. With
With Frank or Blackjack. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I think he looks... I like him better in street clothes. And that car is sick.
That jacket is pretty cool, too.
Yeah, that
is nice in a jacket.
I don't even understand that jacket. I'm looking at it. It's a lot of pockets. Do they make cargo jackets? Because those are like giant pockets. Best picture of Tobias yet, honestly.
As much as I would like to see... Okay, we know Randall's a bad guy, right? Mm-hmm. We know that. And we know I'm conflicted about, not the love, but my future hate of the character of Randall. Not in the books, in the show. Only because of the actor who likes Tobias. But, yes, he looks very nice here, but I still think he looks pretty awesome as Randall. I like that red coat. I'm sorry. That show Turn, I watch red coats with a whole new light now.
No. Shame.
I do.
For shame.
Just the whole, like, not too much. Never too much. So many, like, Brits. Red coat Brits.
It's very popular to be British right now.
Well, it's red coat, yeah. 18th century is, like, big right now.
I'm a fan. Speaking of red coats, the other picture...
Oh, this was
they
so
provided
perfect.
Was
oh.
A picture of a bunch of horses' patooties and red coats on them. And then one
and
dude in
opportunity,
a... And one dude in
white,
a red jacket.
White, black, and brown, and speckled.
And then one dude with a red jacket, and...
He kind of looked like Superman.
It does kind of look like a cape. But he's also got what looks like a baseball cap.
Yes.
Though it also... Denim. It could be a Civil War reenactor's hat. I mean, from this angle, it kind of looks like the gray.
Yeah, I'm not saying that it may not be the cap, but why would a Civil War reenactment person
I'm
be
not saying
in
it makes sense. It makes no more sense than a baseball cap would, or a Superman cape.
Well, we know it's not a cape.
But
it's
my point
a hoodie
is could you have seen it? Ginger just made a face like she was sucking on a lemon when I said
I?
Civil War reenactors.
Oh.
She made a face and shook her head violently in several directions to try to dispel
I
what I said.
I think you can only go left and right. I'm not a good swiveler.
The Outlander community page that Stars has created has a new feature called the Apothecary Cabinet, which is, I would like to think this is what is actually in Claire's surgery at Leah.
This is like her, at least at first, her dream surgery.
But it's so pretty.
It's very
pretty. But it's neat because you can point and click, and if you look at stuff... it'll bring up what it is and what it does. And even on the mobile, this isn't... Because I only looked at it on the mobile, so until you opened this website now, I didn't get a grasp of exactly how pretty the site is. But on the mobile, you can select them by name, and it'll pull it up and tell you what it is and what it was used for. But if you click around on it on a computer, it makes little noises every time you touch something new. So it's a little scary. But it's cool. So we already know that the United States has fallen in love with Written in My Own Heart's Blood and has it number one on their fiction list with a New York Times bestseller. But this week, Written in My Own Heart's Blood is topping McLean's fiction list in Canada. So Canada is also in love with the latest Diana Gabaldon book, which is good news, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of slowly watching it conquer. It's conquering North America. I wonder where it's going to hit next.
In the English-speaking world, / if you speak English and you have the means and the will to get it, you can buy it through Amazon. You know, you can buy it. You can have it shipped to you. It might be expensive, whatever. But the thing is, right now, if you want to read her latest book, you have to be a speaker of English or of German. Because the German copy was actually supposed to be out a little bit earlier than the English. It didn't happen. It's going to be now, I think, July 21st, around there. But the thing is, Diana has a close personal relationship, friendship, with the German translator. And so because of that, she works kind of in tandem in chunks, like Diana does. And that's why the German translation is able to be ready so quickly, so soon. Other ones take, from what I understand, like up to a year. Which I, you know, if I had to rely on a different language, I...
Probably cheaper and take less time.
To learn English.
Just to get Rosetta Stone. Like, English Rosetta Stone.
Gosh,
and, like,
right. You're right.
And learn it.
That's
you would
funny.
Save so much time.
That's true. That's funny.
That would be funny.
We already knew it was going to be big because it's just such a great... If you step back from this, it's just such a great year for Diana and Outlander, for all Outlander fans. You know, even if you're not... No, we're in love with everything, so we have no unkind words to say about anything or anyone. But even if certain selections or certain choices are not your cup of tea or someone's choice of actors or whatever portrayal of certain characters, I think most fans of the books, who read Outlander at least, who know of the series, are pretty excited. Everyone has an opinion, but they're overall, in my experience, I've gone to any events and you've gone to any events, people are so excited. Yes, about Written in My Own Heart's Blood, Diana is, she has been at her gatherings anyway, but especially now with the media and the coverage that she's getting with the production, as part of the production of the Starz series, she's like a rock star. She almost really is. I mean, people standing up until 3-4 hours in a line to, and she's, God bless her, she stays till the very end. But it's just, I mean, she's always been like that. She hasn't changed, but she's always stayed till the end to make sure everyone got a signature in a book. But she's just amazing. And I don't know. I just think she's getting more, although she may not be changing, her status is growing. Because, yes, her fans already knew of her, but hopefully more people will come to the books through the series and at least knowledge of her. Like, I know who George R.R. Martin is now. I had no clue who he was, even though he's written these books, you know, his books a while ago. And I would like to read them. I haven't yet. But I know all about Game of Thrones now. But I didn't know it existed until after the series. So there will be people who have no clue about Outlander, fair enough, and hopefully come to it through the books. And, you know, his status wasn't what it is now, even though he may have had millions of fans, right?
He did, but I know that he gained so many more fans.
That's what I'm saying.
Because it reached such a broader audience.
And his status is now higher because of that.
Absolutely. And probably this should have been my first announcement of the evening. But as of, I'd say, 8:45 last night, I finally finished listening to Written in My Own Heart's Blood.
And, yeah, we're not going to discuss it.
I'm not going to discuss it now, but in the next couple weeks, we will be discussing parts of the book. I'm going to start my spoiler alerts now.
But
not that we're giving any spoilers now, but that we
will
be.
The first thing, though, is we will finish Outlander before we talk anything about Moby.
Correct.
And just so you know, we're not going to have an episode or two or three or whatever. Our plan is not to just sit and chat about Moby. That's not our plan.
No, there is
a specific reason for it, and you will find out. And we think you'll have, hopefully you will have read it, but there will be plenty of spoiler warnings on Twitter, on Facebook, on the blog post, in the description of the episode. We will plaster it everywhere. But just know that
this is like your 2-week notice.
It's at least 2 weeks.
You've got like 2 weeks to finish Moby. So if you haven't
Or you'll have to skip a certain episode.
Right. Or you just have to put it on the back burner.
And come back to it.
Well, I'd say you probably have to skip a couple episodes. And that's as much of a tease as you're ever going to get out of me.
And Summer, stop talking now. I did not even want to go there.
My point being...
But she's very happy that...
If you want to listen to a couple of pretty exciting episodes we have coming up, please finish Moby. Or don't hate us for giving spoilers.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. And now on to our read-along. This week we are discussing chapter 40, Absolution.
So Claire wakes up to find herself in her bed. Anselm sitting by the window reading. He tells her that both she and Jamie have been asleep for about 36 hours.
So she took a coma.
She took a coma?
She took a coma.
Oh, instead of a nap?
Yeah.
Maybe a coma-like nap, but you can't take a coma.
I've taken naps, and I've slept in, but I have never slept 36 hours. I mean, I can't imagine sleeping 36 hours.
You also haven't, well, I won't say what they've, you know what they've been through, but.
Well, that's true, but I just think that's a lot.
So she sits up in bed woozily, and she realizes she's got bruises, her throat is sore. And she almost reaches for the mirror, but she's like, nah, I'm not ready for that. She had been sleeping off the after effects of the opium-induced dreams, Diana writes. They were both alive. And in her, Claire's dreams, full of violence, she kept seeing Jamie dead or dying, and saw again the young man in the snow whom she'd killed. And she saw Frank's face as well. She tells Anselm she'd like him to hear her confession. He gets his stola, blesses her, and waits. Homegirl
tells him everything. Well, I think it's funny that he's like, oh, I'm really not qualified to do that.
She's like, no, it's you. I demand you.
He's like, I'm more of a scholar. I'm just kind of hanging out. And she's like,
you.
No, you.
Only you. Only you. No. Sorry, you know. Yep. And that's actually, that song's about Jesus, huh? Oh, no.
No.
Is it from Something About Love, whatever? Aspects
no,
of Love?
No, it's from Starlight Express. Sorry. It's about trains.
Trains?
They're all trains.
Oh, I never, ever got
they're
that.
They're all on roller skates, and they're all trains.
I got the roller skates. I never got the train.
Oh, my gosh.
And I've seen it live, too.
Oh, gracious.
It's about Jesus, isn't it? Which is kind of, if it were about Jesus, it would be kind of nice, because he's a monk, not Jesus, this guy. Okay, so she demands that he do it, or she insists that he does it. So he comes back, and he's waiting, and she tells him everything. His face doesn't change. So what's his reaction? He says to her, "How marvelous! How extraordinary! How wonderful!" And she'd wanted him to be forced to listen, to take her seriously, and to tell no one. That was why she told him under the seal of confession. But she wants to know what to do. Is she guilty of committing murder, or is she guilty of adultery? Can she and should she use what she knows to change things? And he says he must think on it. And then he absolves her. And as he walks out, he says, "Perhaps tomorrow you could tell me what it's like." I don't know if he meant the future or the time travel or what, but something I just realized as I was reading through this, and I think you're about to get into, is that he's like, "How marvelous, how extraordinary!" And she's like, not so much.
Well, she said that. She's like, well, I don't know about marvelous.
Yep.
It is extraordinary.
Yes, that's true. She goes to check on Jamie, and finding him sleeping, but improved, goes back to sleep herself. So Jamie has slept almost 2 days, and then once awake, Diana writes, enjoyed the cosseting for approximately 24 hours, and then became, in turn, restive, restless, testy, irritable, cranky, fractious, and extremely bad-tempered. He wanted meat and was sick of what he was being given. And one of the things he was eating, among a short list that Diana mentions, was posset. And yes, I looked it up. So it might not be as bad as caudal, that wine and egg mixture.
Yeah, gross.
Oh, but posset. It is gross. But posset was, and I'm reading this from Wikipedia, we'll post a link, was a British hot drink of milk curdled with wine or ale.
See, the second you said curdled, I no longer want to drink it.
But at least there's no egg chunks in it.
No, it's just milk chunks. Do you know what curdling is? That's like I gave you a glass of cottage cheese.
I get curdling and coagulating mixed up sometimes. But one's blood, one's not.
Yeah, but coagulating is blood. But curdling is milk. And it's like, I'm going to give you chunky milk.
It's still better than chunky eggs.
No.
In wine. That's disgusting.
Look, by the time your milk has chunks in it, generally that means it's bad.
But this does not make the milk bad. It just makes it curdled.
Drink. Yeah, gross.
It's curdled with wine or ale, often spiced, which was popular from medieval times to the 19th century. The word is mainly used nowadays for a related dessert similar to syllabub.
I would need a shot of whiskey to clear my mouth of the taste of the curdled milk.
Oh, you heard it first here. She'd be willing to have a shot of whiskey.
That may be the only thing that would clear that taste out of my mouth.
And in the Middle Ages, it was used as a cold and flu remedy and was more of a drink than a mousse. Oh, see, I did not need to go there. A mousse?
Ooh. Syllabub is a moose. Is that what this
is? That is? No, it's Middle Ages. They're saying that nowadays it's called, nowadays it's related to a dessert similar to syllabub. In the Middle Ages, it, I think it's still referring to posset. It was used, because now we have what it is, we don't have the purpose. It was used as a cold and flu remedy, which makes sense-ish. He doesn't have the flu, but he's ill. But was more of a drink than a mousse. Well, that's good to hear, but I wouldn't even drink it a mousse, curdling. So to make the drink, milk was heated to a boil and then mixed with wine or ale, which curdled it. And the mixture was usually spiced.
All right, Outlander Kitchen.
Oh my gosh.
Let's do this.
She might be able to make this delicious.
Maybe.
But please don't ever do coddle. It was considered a specific remedy for some minor illnesses, such as cold, and general remedy for others, as even today, people drink hot milk to help them get to sleep. Okay, hot milk? Fine. But
chunky milk? No.
Just say no to chunky eggs and wine. I still think posset is better than coddle. I'm sorry, it is. I would drink
on the same posset. Circle.
Okay,
of
I would
hell.
Never. What? No,
the same
I would,
level.
No, I would want. You had a good idea. I think that we will ask. She could tell us no, but we can ask Teresa from Outlander Kitchen if she'd be willing or interested to maybe not make an entire recipe, but to give us tips on what might be a good mixture for things. I will not ask her about coddle. I am not interested in coddle. This I could maybe see myself trying.
Only because they said it's similar to a dessert. Other than that, I don't know if you'd be interested.
I'm thinking about, because it's wine and it's milk. Those are two whole foods. Claire says that he'll get meat when she says he's ready. Remember, Jamie is not happy with getting posset and all the other things that he's getting. A lot of gruel or broth. He's not yet able to keep down solid food, but he's being very difficult. And she says to him, "And who do you think saved your miserable life for you anyway?" He replies, "I didn't ask you to, did I? I told you to leave me, no?" It's hard for me not to laugh because I see what's coming. "And I can't see why you bothered to save my life anyway if it's only to starve me to death, unless you enjoy watching it." Jamie's a nutball. He just makes me laugh. Well, which we know is Diana because she's behind everything. She calls him a bloody ingrate and he counters with, "Shrew." He gets up anyway, only to take a step and sit down, swaying on a stool. She gives up, tells him he can have meat, and then if he vomits, he'll be cleaning it up. And she storms out and sees a few of the monks and Murta standing there, the latter with a smile, as Gallic obscenities could be heard from the room behind her. And something also, he like threw this basin, apparently, I forgot that part, he threw a basin against the wall at the door. Maybe the wall, but she heard it. Murta says, "He's feeling better then." Claire replies, "Well, yes, he is." She then spends some time in the herbary and walks with Anselm to the fish pond. He gets some stale bread from the kitchen and they set about feeding the fish. Watching fish is very calming. Do you think so, Sam? It can be.
It can be.
It can be a little freaky, but it is. If you add music to that, it can be very...
Last time I went to the aquarium, we went to the Georgia Aquarium when we were in Atlanta in February, and they have like the largest aquarium, I believe, in the world. And we literally went, and they have a huge, like, picture window that you can sit in front of. And the glass is, like,
probably 3 or 4 feet thick.
Oh, yeah. 3 or 4 feet thick. Not even real glass. I think it's, like, some sort of a plastic glass. But we just sat on the ground in front of the window and watched all the fish, like, swim by for, like, 20 minutes. It is really relaxing. Plus, we would give them all voices.
Fish.
Because, like, there was this... Because their mouths, they just kind of move their mouths when they swim. They don't, you know, it's just like part of their breathing or whatever. And so there was a big fish that just kind of opened his, would constantly open and close his mouth. So as he swam by, we went, dum de dum de dum de dum de dum.
Okay.
And there was...
This is Outlander, not fish.
And there was this one
fish
ray.
Show.
Like a big, like...
manta ray.
Manta ray, like a huge one. And he would literally just do like...
Flips.
Somersaults, like flips in the air. And we would go, wee, wee. Like, people were staring at us, but we had a good time.
It would probably be a good time. Let's get back to Jay and
okay.
Claire. Actually, at this point, Anselm and Claire.
You asked me about fish.
And not really. I said, aren't they meditative?
No,
or
you
isn't,
said...
I said, isn't it nice to watch fish? And then you went into how nice it was.
It is. Don't ask me. You asked me.
Okay.
Shame on you.
No, not shame on me. I can imagine them being together in silence, the two of them, and this time being almost meditative. Because feeding fish is fun, too, but you don't have to talk when you're looking at fish. And they move... They can move quickly, too, but they tend to move kind of slowly as long as they don't perceive danger. Anselm is still marveling at Claire's, quote-unquote, situation. He says, "Truly, God has been good to show me such things." She replies, "Well, that's nice. I don't know whether he's been quite so obliging to me." Claire and Jamie both have it. I mean, it's very funny. He tells her he's been contemplating her situation and likens her to a shipwrecked traveler. Cast away in a strange land, bereft of friends and familiarity, without resources save what the new land can provide. Such a happening is disaster, truly, and yet may be the opening for great opportunity and blessings. What if the new land shall be rich? New friends may be made, and a new life begun, he says. If you have been deprived of your earlier life, perhaps it is only that God has seen fit to bless you with another that may be richer and fuller. I thought, doesn't that open a whole other can of worms? I know he's not saying she was deprived in her time with Frank. She's saying since she has been deprived of her life with Frank, maybe now God's giving her, if she has to be deprived of one thing, maybe she'll have greater blessings in this past life.
Right, but
in this
her,
new time.
But if her life with Frank was greater, she wouldn't have chosen Jamie.
That's true, and that's where it comes to that point. She had to go through a lot of things for that. My words, was she deprived in her own life with Frank? That's not what they're talking about, but it made me think about it. And maybe she's now seeing what she has with Jamie. Granted, she and Frank really didn't have much of a chance. They had a quick marriage, right? Then the war, and then a quick little doo-doo together, and they...
They weren't given much of a chance, I mean. It was clear that...
But when it came time to choose...
That Jamie and Claire had much more passion between them.
Yes.
And... You know, choosing between the two, I think, A, Jamie needs her more.
Oh, absolutely.
And she needs
Brother Anselm says that. Or Father Anselm. Claire certainly was deprived of her own life, meaning her in her own time. But there was a lot of time after coming through the stones that she would have disagreed that she was being blessed with something fuller and richer. A lot of time probably up to the point at the stones. I mean, it kind of had you had to face reality then. Claire says... Oh, it's full, all right.
It is full. It's like a full-time job.
It is. And basically, Anselm is not allowing her to get much talking in, and I love it. He would say this big, long thing, and she would start to say a really short sentence, and he'd butt in and go finish and continue. You know, Claire talks a lot. I mean, she's not, like, gabby-gabby, but she does. She's used to getting kind of her way as far as being a strong woman and all that, and with Jamie, although Jamie can be very big-headed and stubborn. So she's had her chance when he didn't speak in the confession, because it was all her. And she asked for his counsel, so she's going to listen. So he says that technically, the marriage with Jamie predates her marriage with Frank. In her lifetime, no, but on the calendar, yes.
Yes.
But she hasn't done anything wrong. That it's possible to act in strict accordance with God's law and with one's conscience, you comprehend, and still to encounter difficulties and tragedy. And I wrote, you might call falling through time a difficulty.
A little bit.
Regarding the young man she killed, she was obliged to do so, Anselm says, and that the church recognizes situations in which one is obliged to do things to protect oneself and one's family. At her shiver of cold, Anselm recommends she put her feet in the water. It's kept warm by nearby mineral springs.
Foreshadowing.
It's a little hint at what may come.
I could use a hot mineral spring bath.
Oh, right in my backyard? Oh, anytime. I thought this part was kind of sad. Anselm likens Frank with the young soldier Claire had to kill. He says, "He, too, I think, must be commended to God as one of the regrettable things that you can do nothing about." That is very sad. I mean, it's the truth, but it's sad. She insists, "But I could have done something. I could have gone back, perhaps." He latches onto her perhaps and says that she doesn't know what may have happened. And she agrees. She says it wasn't just the danger, though, that kept her from going back. It was mostly that she couldn't leave Jamie. He brightens at this and says, "If you had the good sense to recognize and accept the gift," meaning the gift of a good marriage, "it is of no reproach to you."
The gift of a hot Scot.
Yeah, or that. So he finishes up by saying, "No man can serve two masters, and no more can a woman." Regarding what she should do now, he puts that conversation off until they get to the kitchens. Claire is still astonished he believes her, and Anselm says, "Ma chère, I serve a man who multiplied the loaves and fishes, who healed the sick and raised the dead. Shall I be astonished that the Master of Eternity has brought a young woman through the stones of the earth to do his will?" I guess if you believe that and you put it that way, I can dig it.
Diana writes, well, I reflected, it was better than being denounced as the whore of Babylon.
Most things are. Most things are.
Especially, well, yeah. Not literally in biblical time, but she knows about something likened to that because she was almost burned as a witch. So, true. She's been there. Claire says that she is afraid that she may change the future by telling people things or by doing certain things. She claims that she already has since she killed the soldier. Anselm says, yes, she has changed things. The people she'd healed who may have died. It works both ways, and that's very important too. It's very easy to look at the lives you've destroyed, but not the lives you've saved.
It's true, but this is the paradox of time travel. Oh, yeah. Because who's to say that that's not what always happened?
Because you were there.
Because you were there.
Exactly.
So.
Okay, an aside. I've spoken with fan friends, and I've spoken with Summer many times and in depth about the whole time travel. I love talking about it. Yes, sometimes it can get more in depth and it can be hard to wrap your head around, but I love all the possibilities of it. I mean, I'm not talking about in our life. I'm talking about in her book. I love her. I love what she's created, especially in later books. It makes you think. It literally does kind of blow your mind and forces you to think outside the box of possibility, right? We have to have an episode at some point about time travel. That's it. About her theory. That's it. Maybe on a in between seasons, if we get the second season, or on a hiatus or something, that would be a great thing to do. So Anselm likens her knowledge of the future to, again, to the shipwrecked castaway's tool, a knife or a fishing line. It's not sinful to use it, so long as you do so in accordance with the dictates of God's law and the best that you can, or she can. He gives her a pastry fresh from the oven and says, whatever you are to do, you will require strength for it. So take one last bit of advice. When in doubt, eat.
Well, it wouldn't be France if they weren't handing out pastries.
That's true. She checks on Jamie later that evening, and she notices an empty broth bowl, and she asks Brother Roger if he had eaten. And yes, he had eaten the bread and the meat, and Brother Roger said yes. And she asked if he kept it down, and Brother Roger said no. And she asked, you didn't clean it up after him, did you? And Brother Roger said no, but that Jamie had a basin nearby just in case. So even though he was given something that she had promised, and she was right about what was going to happen, he was still clever enough to not have to clean up. Yeah. He was wily. She says, damn wily, Scott. Claire goes to see Jamie late the next day and sees only Myrta. The window was uncovered and there is no Jamie. She throws some questions at Myrta and he says that Jamie was tired of being cooped up and went out into the snow, naked. He basically went out the window when Myrta wouldn't let him out the door. She leaves to catch up with him. She finds him sitting on an old Roman mile marker about a mile up the road from the abbey. She gets him to come back, though he insists to walk part of the way back. Once he's safely in bed warming up, he tells her that, at the end, Randall wanted him to tell him he loved him. But Jamie wouldn't. And after that, Randall used Jamie again, repeating, "Tell me that you love me, Alex." Jamie was curious how he knew his second name, and then Randall started beating him, and that was the last he remembered before awakening for a short time on the back of a horse, Jamie says. I think if I had told him that, he would have killed me. This is something, because I'm taking closer notes now, that I didn't remember, or I was reminded of. I think he's probably right. I don't know why, but maybe having that confirmation would have made Randall given him what he wanted and kind of calmed him a little bit and say, okay, I can let him go, you know, or whatever was in his twisted mind. So I think Jamie may be right that if he had said what he wanted to hear, because usually people do whatever they can to get out of fear, pain, torture. It's human. It makes perfect sense. Now, Randall never said, tell me and I'll stop. But he was beating him for not telling him. So who knows if he's wrong? But I never thought much about what Jamie says here about how if he actually said it, it may have saved his life, but he didn't say it.
It sure didn't save his back.
Claire remembers the genealogical charts that Frank had showed her, that there was a third son, a younger brother of Randall's. The three sons of Joseph and Mary Randall were William, Jonathan, and Alexander. Jamie tells her of the fortress he'd mentioned, the one inside him. He says, I've built a lean-to, at least, and a roof to keep out the rain. Considering all of their options and Jamie's seasickness, France did seem the best choice for them to consider making a home in. And Claire spoke the language.
so that didn't hurt. The Fraser family had many connections in France. She thought about the coming year and what might be done to change things. She also thought about Jonathan Randall, his death, which she had proclaimed to him. And yet, the genealogical chart had said he'd been married and had had a child before he died. After she's been asleep for a while, Jamie comes to her, asks to share her bed. They make love, though she is afraid it might be too soon. And so is he, come to find out. His stomach rumbles, and he says it's her fault for starving him. And she says, all right, you win. You can have an egg for your breakfast tomorrow. Ha, he replies. I knew you'd feed me if I offered you a suitable inducement. And they fall asleep face to face, wrapped in each other's arms. As Diana writes, locked in each other's arms.
And that is chapter 40.
Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at @outlanderpod. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/outlanderpod. Or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.
I dreamt it last night that my young